This show was first broadcast on Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. For more information on our lineup of shows and the role we play in the media, visit freefm.org.nz.
Yemba, kutikanga na bina rumba, bina, tangonga na moni bana oke, mbayele masilika ye. Kutikanga na yemba zembo, kutikanga na bina rumba, tangonga na moni bana oke, mbayele masilika ye.
New Zealanders Randall and Gail Lockie of Rothesay Bay treasure their friendships from when they worked surrounded by a new culture overseas. Randall Lockie's book, adapted for broadcast on our program Historic Souvenirs, shares their memory.
The Papua New Guinea Expatriate Experience. Newsletters from Port Moresby.
Free FM 89.0 is proudly supported by New Zealand On Air.
Ebeteli abana oke, eyembeli abana oke.
When I went for the position as international cargo manager stationed at Port Moresby with Air New Guinea, neither my wife Gail or I conceived how it'll surround us with colourful characters, all creeds and colours, as we come to understand their culture. Years are passing, none any cooler than the last. We suffer the enervating heat that stalks us beyond Port Moresby's air conditioners, yearning for the monsoons. To keep cool is the desired benefit, not the mud underfoot that accompanies it. A couple who are long acclimatized to life in the tropics are John and Barbara Roach, who settled in Papua New Guinea 21 years before we do. Barbara, tall, very vivacious, redhead, is a former nurse, a perfectionist. Barbara often turns up at my airport office wearing tight jeans and boob tube, a complete career change from keeping patients alive to embalming those who are not. Her husband helping calls for someone of her personality to be undertaker. Barbara is actually Papua New Guinea's only undertaker at the time, a role now called a funeral director. Their private residence also serves as funeral parlour. It's next to the cemetery. Being in their house, it's important which door is used for access. We need know what lies within. One door opens into Barbara and Ron's private lounge. Beside it, another, the door to the casket room of Roach Funeral Home, proudly serving since 1975. And last but not least, this door opens to the morgue. They invite us to dinner. We take good care not to go by the wrong door, lest the meals prepared on the slab of the morgue. A truly enterprising couple. Ron Roach served in Papua New Guinea's police force for 14 years, then takes up a position as sales manager for Barocco Motors. Sometimes he's to be seen dressed in pinstriped trousers and tails, so as to dash away from selling cars to conduct an occasional funeral service. Neither sees any incongruity or conflict over their multitasking, treating their lifestyle as straightforward. It's reassuring to help ourselves to their delicious spaghetti bolognese, rather than cold cuts. What an extraordinary mix of vocations for the couple in their rather eerie setting. Barbara lives at peace with her surroundings, having refrigerators full of cadavers awaiting funerals or burial. She speaks as if discussing a crate of beer in the fridge, which indeed she has as well. I imagine Barbara has her lighter side to maintain her mental equilibrium, which is why it tickles our sense of humour to hear her say that if the heat and the mosquitoes don't get you, the roaches will. Barbara loves diamonds. Remember the tune? Diamonds are a girl's best friend. Barbara's collection is sparkly, bigger than most, and rumoured to have a mutual interest with the world-famous and accomplished entertainer and pianist, who bequeaths his valued collection of cars, cash, costumes, and, yes, jewellery, to a foundation in his own name for advancing the creative and performing arts, especially through scholarships for young and promising musicians beginning their careers. Yes, Liberace comes to entertain Australians in 1971. But allegedly, Liberace made a special trip to the side to meet Barbara to see her diamond collection. I ask, is the collection insured? She says no one ever comes near and assures me no one ever will. I can't imagine why not, unless to do with theirs being a funeral home. Or is it her husband Ron's formidable presence? From all of his experience, policing an area of 20,000 square miles, Ron's jurisdiction takes him to the rugged Sepik region, arresting criminals. So there's no risk of prowlers troubling their Roche funeral home. Ron recalls how these forays into the remote valleys take weeks at a time, involve taking half a dozen interpreters of the various languages encountered in separate communities along the way. From in the Sepik River Basin, he acquires three rifles to display on the wall of their lounge. All feature very intricately carved stocks, making them very likely rare and valuable. Our airline opens a new route for passengers to fly across the Pacific in its Boeing 707 from Port Moresby directly to Honolulu. We expect it justifies the media reporting the opportunity to regularly fly this unusual route, but never do we expect the headline emblazoned in a local newspaper, "Aloha, who's that?" A senior airport official who was a stowaway on the inaugural Air New Guinea flight to Hawaii has cost the airline $500 American fine. The director of the Port Moresby International Airport, Mr. Joe Arazi, who was not on the passenger list of the Boeing 707, was found in one of the aircraft's toilets after takeoff from Port Moresby. United States migration officials declared him a prohibited migrant when the flight reached Honolulu in Hawaii after its direct crossing of the Pacific at the weekend. He was deported when the flight returned to Port Moresby on Sunday, and the airline was fined the $500 for having permitted his entry. Civil aviation officials yesterday had no comment on the incident except to say that Mr. Arazi had a week off work. Contacted at his home, Mr. Arazi also refused to comment on what had happened. He did not say whether his unscheduled flight had been deliberate or accidental. Air New Guinea said last night it intended to release a statement later. Nothing surprises us here anymore. When Gail and I decide to take a brief break in Hawaii and Los Angeles, we're lucky to be upgraded to first class. Early in the flight, the flight attendants deliver their usual safety talk, including demonstrating a practical life jacket drill. The safety talk is taken to heart as passengers dutifully don their life jackets. Trouble is, while wearing these bulky life jackets, some passengers are now partaking of the aircraft's drinks service. I wonder why cabin attendants don't tell us. It's okay, you may take them off now. So I suggest it, and they adopt the idea, giving us more room to move. We were beginning to wonder if the aircraft's crew know something we don't. Thankfully, there's no cause for alarm over the life jackets. Air New Guinea flies another weekly service to Indonesian outposts to the airports of Wewak and Jayapura, Wewak's airfield on the northern coasts, where the Japanese invaders built their largest airbase in Papua New Guinea. In the Second World War, the Allies' alleged atrocities of cannibalism and mutilation, leading to a Japanese officer sentenced to death, later commuted to 5 years imprisonment for his crimes in this tropical paradise. Japan's military airfield of the past and bitter conflict is today's tarmac to welcome tourists landing on Wewak International Airport. Something is up with Air New Guinea's operation, so our administration asks me to go to sort it out. It shouldn't take more than about 3 hours. Hang on, that's longer than the scheduled 1 hour to turn this flight around at Jayapura, just over the international border of Indonesia. Having declared Netherlands sovereignty over Indonesia, the Dutch colonial settlers called this coastal town Hollandia, not Jayapura. No doubt in its day a very desirable destination to go on holiday. But as for me, I don't relish the prospect. In fact, it's almost for sure I'd miss that flight, regardless of how simple our head office boffins think it is to sort out the technical hitch. Why don't they do it then? Missing the one and only Air New Guinea return flight to Port Moresby, stuck in a tropical outpost 6 days to wait for the next flight home to report to head office. No, thank you. Well, there might be another way, if I'm ready to risk life and limb. For decades, Mission Aviation Fellowship engages in ministry and mercy missions to the people of Papua New Guinea. Long flights over inhospitable and hostile terrain doesn't daunt their pilots. My faith in them is shaped on all these years of faultless performance in small aircraft, well-maintained and modern. From time to time, they fly outsiders, if time and space permits. Do I dare do it? Ask if there's a seat to spare back to civilization sooner than had I been stranded, waiting nearly a week for our conventional commercial flight. Now, don't get me wrong. Mission Aviation Fellowship has operated in and out of 75 airstrips since it began in 1951. However, there's call for caution arising from recent separate incidents whereby two of its light planes are lost. All considered, I don't wish to be in a third incident if it arises. I doubt my destiny depends on identifying and fixing an alleged anomaly in Air New Guinea's processes, as they continue to function, so far as I know, without requiring anyone to visit Wewak and Jayapura. I'm glad not to be going.
Reached out and touched me for the first time. I felt my heart had never beat before. You gave my life some meaning for the first time.
Our townhouse is built on poles on a steep sloping ridge. Gale appears to have given up any hope that I'll get a sudden surge of energy and knock the garden into shape, but quite honestly, the thought of manually labouring on an 80-degree slope with the hardness of the ground not far short of concrete doesn't appeal. Consequently, Gale has entered into an arrangement with our next-door neighbour, whereby her garden boy spends 1 day a week working on our garden. For these services, Gail pays our neighbour 3 kina every week. Our neighbour also pays her garden boy his usual weekly wage. However, from a note we have received under our back door, the garden boy has other ideas. Writing a note which is difficult to decipher, but we gather that Abraham, our gardener, will be able to sort it out with Gail. In 1980, we begin clubbing. No, not nightclubs, if that's what you thought. We've joined the Aviat Club, This club is originally formed in 1948 by the staff at the Department of Aviation and for their relaxation and enjoyment. The Aviat is by far the most popular club to join in Port Moresby, and the members are in the main expatriates. There are, in fact, just over 2,000 members, each issued with their own Yale key to facilitate easy freedom of movement and to ensure extra security for all members. The club's only a 10-minute drive from our townhouse, and Gail and I in particular find the swimming pool very relaxing in the early evenings during the week after work. Movies are shown on an outside screen each Wednesday and Saturday night. As a prelude to the main advertised feature film, some rather amusing 25- or 30-year-old adventure series are shown. These films are actually in black and white and always feature either Sergeant Preston of the Yukon, Sky King, or an underwater diver hero whose name eludes me for the moment. Gail dislikes these old films intensely, while I, on the other hand, rather enjoy them. I did have a chuckle at work the other day. Richard Elbon, a colleague of mine, asked if I'd noticed what film had been advertised at the club. Initially, I can't recall the film's name, and then it came to me. I told Richard that I was pretty sure the name of the film was Hello, Christopher. The next day, after Richard had been to the club to see the film, he tells me that the film's name is actually Goodbye, Columbus, not Hello, Christopher, and we both have a good laugh. Maybe the heat and mosquitoes are getting to me. The club's restaurant is excellent. Once we enjoy some Daru crayfish cooked under the grill with the bacon and cheese mornay sauce. Honestly, it's literally cordon bleu standard. The club also features an air-conditioned bar, a video and TV viewing area, darts club, billiard room, squash courts, and some soon-to-be-finished tennis courts. There's quite a lot going for it. The club buildings are rather antiquated and colonial. It's a lot of fun and we're getting good value from it.
It's not what you can do for me that matters. Even though your love is pure and true, it's knowing that you care enough about me to reach into my heart and pull me through. And I know I'm really gonna make it this time. I'll never ever be the same. No, you're always there.
On occasion, it's necessary for us to bunk down in the club for a few hours after we had watched a film. A first-hand report comes to our notice, received at the club, the news that a full-scale riot's going on between the country's two disciplinary forces, namely the army and the police. This all takes place on the Hubert Murray Highway, a road that we'll need to negotiate on our return home. Once word's received at the club that it's all clear, we take off rather apprehensively, but other than a few tear gas canisters on the roadside, there's nothing to see, and we never do find out what the Barney was about. Air New Guinea is currently undergoing considerable industrial problems. It culminates in a 48-hour strike a fortnight ago, and current stop-work protest that's grounded our domestic and international fleet at present. It's estimated that it costs the airline 600,000 kina a day. That converts to about 900,000 in New Zealand dollars every day. So we're hoping for an early settlement before the coffers run dry. Expatriate staff, by virtue of the stated conditions in our contracts, are not allowed to strike. The problem's complicated, aren't they all? And has its origins with the change of government, and in particular the Minister for Transport. This all takes place while Gail and I are on leave. It starts out as a movement for instant localisation of expatriate positions by nationals. The unfortunate situation that's developed is that as a consequence of this political interference, the general manager of Air New Guinea has been sacked, and every day we get word of suspensions or resignations from expatriates in key positions. Naturally wondering where it's all going to end up. I appear to be safe for now. Maybe this is because my office is actually down on the airstrip and not in the head office up the road. Hopefully, I've been overlooked. Out of sight, out of mind, they say. However, we're not sure about Gail's position because she works in that staff office up the road, in what these days we might call the personnel department. I tell Gail to let me know if she hears any word of my imminent sacking, and I'll get in first and resign. We can now only hope that at the end of the day there'll be enough professional managerial staff, including engineers and pilots, left to continue a viable operation when all is returned to normal, bearing in mind that much is not normal in these times in parts.
Chicken.
For more episodes, use the accessmedia.nz app for iOS and Android devices, or subscribe to this podcast via Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Apple Podcasts. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.